Okay, Guy. So you're telling me that from now on, companies are going to have chief enchantment officers?
In a perfect world, I would not hold my breath for that. That would be, if the book really becomes popular and it achieves this, like, excellence kind of standard. The fact remains that in a perfect world, every employee of a company would try to enchant its customers and not segregate it. So, you're in charge of enchantment and you're in charge of engineering and you're in charge of support and you're in charge of sales. Conceptually, everybody should enchant the customer, whether it's the delivery boy or delivery girl, right up to the CEO. CEO may be the hardest of all,
Yeah,
actually.
that's an enchantment problem right
Yes.
there, right there. Now, let's talk about it. What do you mean by enchantment? And this is a business book. This is not about magic or personal relationships, as in how do you get a better one. This is really a business book.
Well, it is and it isn't, to
It's
tell
Guy. Okay, we're there.
the truth. There's a great story about Tom Clancy was at a press conference for a new book, and someone in the press corps asked him, "What's your new book about, Tom?" And Clancy said, "It's about $25." So this is me telling you that the intended market for this book is anybody with 14 books street price, 14, excuse me, $14 street price. So enchantment is the process of building on a base of trustworthiness and likability and a great product or service or cause or idea to create this relationship that's beyond the transaction. It's beyond influencing and persuading and wooing, so that it's not just closing a sale, but it's a delightful, long-term, deep relationship. And a very good example would be the difference between being persuaded or convinced or closed to buy a particular laptop, let's say, from Dell, from HP, from Lenovo, versus
And
Apple.
here's the logic.
Yeah,
Here's the all the
right.
logic that we have here.
And it's a corporate standard. And you won't go wrong with it, and whatever. Whereas Apple, you buy a Macintosh, you get enchanted, then you buy an iPhone, then you buy an iPod, and then now you need to read at night, so you buy an iPad. Now you need to buy books, so you use iBooks, and you need some songs, so it's iTunes. And next thing you know, you're waiting in front of the store at 20-degree weather, 24 hours, so you can be the first person to get iPhone 5. That's enchantment. Another example of enchantment would be Virgin America. It's arguably one of the few airlines, particularly domestic airlines, that you look forward to flying. And in San Francisco, it's a particularly good experience because Virgin America flies out of the International Terminal, which is a newer terminal, cleaner terminal, nicer terminal. And most domestic flights are during the day, and most international flights are at night. So it's easier to get through the security. I mean, it's just the whole thing. The planes are beautiful, the whole thing. And another example of an enchanting company is Zappos. And they're enchanting primarily because of their trustworthiness.
Apples?
Zappos.
Okay, try that
Zappos,
again.
the shoe company. So Zappos is very trustworthy. And one of the most obvious manifestations of that trustworthiness is that they pay shipping both ways. You buy a shoe, it gets shipped to you. If you don't like it, you send it back, without an RMA, without a big deal. And they pay shipping the other way too. That's trust.
And they know they're going to perform.
You know they're going to perform, and there's no risk. I mean, in a sense, it's a trustworthiness born out of practicality, which is if the founders of Zappos had told me when they're starting the company, listen, our business model is we're going to sell women shoes that they haven't tried on, I would have told them they're nuts.
But the funny thing about Zappos is when you do find a pair of shoes you really like,
Yeah.
you say, I really like this. You're probably not anywhere near where the shoe store was. So I better get another pair.
I know.
And you go online and you want to make sure you get exactly the same shoe. And so you go to a place like Zappos. And so you may not have tried it on the first time there online, which you
Right.
can't do. It's like, no, that's the one I really want. I already know it.
Yeah.
So who knew about a secondary shoe market?
The second sale is much easier than the first in that case, right? And that's usually not the case.
Now, we've just been talking about this reason and that reason, all those things that you do. We're talking about a whole side bet here. We're
How
talking
so?
About that. I think, well, you know, I have to say that it was an old, I won't say old, I have to say it was a guy who was very experienced, had a lot of companies, made a lot of money, and,
yeah.
And he said, look, I've been through a lot of meetings where people make decisions. And we have the presentations, and we have all the analysis, and he goes, I used to just watch for it. Were we going to do it, or weren't we? And then, all of a sudden, there's this moment of emotion that you get to have the emotion because you haven't done anything really stupid. I mean, the analytics are there. Suddenly everybody wants to do it.
Yeah.
Or suddenly everybody doesn't want to do it. And he goes, and it's entirely emotional. It's unbelievable. It's emotional. So we do know that if we actually start to cull the non-logical portion, we start to cater to it, we actually, when you put the two together, you have far more success.
It's very powerful. It's very powerful. And I would almost make the case that the emotional side is more powerful than the rational side. And in many business decisions, I wouldn't say they purposely, the managers purposely seek an irrational action or reaction or solution. But in most of these situations, there is no objective measure. I mean, you really can't know. You can't predict the success of something. And history is a very poor predictor of the future. So it becomes a gut-level decision, and many gut-level decisions are based on who's giving you the choices, right? And if an enchanting person gives you the choice, it's even if it's a bad choice, it's much more likely to be accepted. That is good news and bad news. If you're an enchanting person, that's useful. If you're an enchanting person who's a bozo, that's not good for the company.
You could write a book and get on this show.
That too, yes, at the extreme, yes.
Now, there are times in business when we're not just going along saying we're trying to build a better mousetrap, and here are its features and its benefits, and here's how we're pricing it compared to everybody else. But in fact, you're in a difficult situation. I mean, there are times in which enchantment is necessary to carry you over the top.
I would make the case that the more innovative your product, the more you need enchantment. Now, you would think in a perfect world, when you come out with a better mousetrap, that the world would beat a path to your door. But
they say, I'm busy.
I don't, no room
for nothing new.
Yes.
Yeah.
I can't make the decision. Check with me when the budget's open again. Whatever it is, corporate standards, whatever it is. And I learned this lesson at Apple. You know, for me, the good news of Apple was Macintosh is a success today. The bad news of Apple is it's only 5% of the market. And believe me, in 1984, 1985, you know, we thought we would have 95% of the market. And there would be these other trivial little OSs just hanging out on the periphery to do, I don't know what, vaxes. And obviously that has not come true. So I learned a very valuable lesson at Apple that the better mousetrap doesn't necessarily win. And so it takes enchantment to overcome the inertia, to overcome the resistance. Techniques like social proof, where you make it easy for people to see that other people are using the product or the service. And Apple did
That's the sheep strategy?
Yeah. Well, not the sheep. Sheep have intelligence.
It's the cool people strategy.
Yeah, it's the cool people strategy.
In crowd.
And it can work both ways, you know, obviously. You can also drink Kool-Aid. So
But enchantment was part of the Kool-Aid. It was in the air. I mean, I remember the first time I laid eyes on you, I was totally pregnant with my youngest son, who is probably going to say, you were? My friends
ago.
Heard you on air saying yeah. that. So it's true. I was totally pregnant. And I was working with a crowd who was doing one of the first databases. And we went and we're going to go see Guy Kawasaki was going to review this, you know. And it was one of these things where we were not on the official list, but had figured out
yeah.
how to get a Lisa, which is what you needed
yeah.
to perform, and figured out all the stuff you were supposed to do.
Yeah.
And somehow I think I got the connection to get us in,
yeah.
you know, through whatever I was doing, because it was pre-Technation. And we walk in the door with a, you know, a sort of a rambling engineer who is, not together,
Not too
and
enchanting.
a guy with a little money who is very not enchanting,
Yeah.
and then me, huge as
Very
a
enchanting.
house, and we just trundle in the door, and you were kind of like, how did you get in here? And you're like, okay, give me your disk, and you remember those little gray disks,
Yeah.
bring it in, and you're like, let's see, because the first thing that happened is that, you go in, and here's Steve's car there with the scratch down the side, parked in the
Handicap spot,
handicapped
yeah,
spot right in
right.
front of the door, and you walk past that, and you go in the
Yeah.
cubicles, and the little beanbag, things on the floor, and you're like, oh, this is just, I'll give you like 3 minutes, but this is not gonna, I mean, I already knew they were calling you the jewelry salesman, so don't go there. So anyway, but I mean, the amazing thing is that it was in the air, and we hadn't seen that yet in Silicon Valley, and yet the hard work had to be there. You stuck that disc in, and you went, oh, how'd you guys figure this out? How did that? Of course, they did real
Nobody
well.
did at that
Nobody
point.
did, but we had figured it out,
Yeah.
and it wasn't easy, but of course, once you, for somebody like me, oh, you can't do that? Let's do it. And so, but it was really an interesting time because nothing had hit the market yet.
Yes.
Nothing was there,
Those are the
and
days.
nobody was supposed to have been able to do this. I mean, it used to be the manufacturer gave you the applications, and it was like, no, we're going to get everybody else to write the applications, which is how this
That
happened.
was
We're
evangelism.
talking, this is, the evangelist, but there was an enchantment. Everybody who was working on this, not just Apple, all these people devoting their lives that had, they have no idea whether there's going to be business there.
You're making me
They were
cry.
enchanted, and that was a part of the whole thing.
Oh, it was the main part of that thing,
Nothing worked yet.
we used to call it the reality distortion field, the Steve Jobs reality distortion field. I've upgraded that term, I've taken all those words out and just called it enchantment. You talk about your first experience there. When I first saw Macintosh, it was a freaking religious experience, and the clouds parted, the angels started singing, the scales were removed from my eyes, and I was an Apple II user and 24 by 80. And cursor keys and no graphics whatsoever. And if you were lucky, you had a color monitor, but most of us had this green
Oh, yeah.
monitor,
Or
right?
some people were calling it orange ones.
Yeah. And you had, if you had this card, you had more characters on the screen. And I saw Macintosh and I saw Mac Paint and, the mouse, and you could just spray paint and draw squares and fill it with patterns and integrate text and graphics in Mac, right? And that changed my life. That day changed my life, really. That was truly product enchantment.
So in that sense, you saw the product and you became overwhelmed with it because it
Overwhelmed.
looked like nothing you ever saw before.
Yes.
So it can happen to you with a sports car.
It has happened, I would say, several times in my life. First time I met my wife, the.
You knew
Yeah.
something's
She
different
didn't.
here.
So first time I met my wife, first time I saw Macintosh, when I became a Christian, and the first time I stepped on the ice to play ice hockey. Those are the four big religious experiences in my life that truly enchanted me.
You're listening to Tech Nation. I'm Moira Gunn. My guest today is Guy Kawasaki, the former chief evangelist of Apple and a founding partner of Garage Technology Ventures. He's the author of many books, including The Art of the Start. He's here today with Enchantment, the art of changing hearts, minds, and actions. Well, now let's go. I love the chapters here. Let's actually get the business done about the darn book. I go, yeah, we can't just go down memory lane. We got to actually do something here.
That guy's looking pretty bored over
Oh,
there.
that's our
Wake
engineer.
him
Yeah,
up.
he falls asleep during all the interviews. Don't worry about it, Guy. Yeah,
I
Howie's been
shouldn't
here
take it
from the
personally.
start. Say wave, Howie.
We're
Wave to the listeners.
not enchanting him,
No. He's seen it all. He's
huh?
seen it all. Now, why is the first chapter, what's the first rule or the first goal here? Achieving likability. How to achieve likability.
This is a fundamental because, frankly, if you think about it, it's not possible to be enchanted by someone you don't like.
Oh,
And
yeah.
that's kind of a pretty basic thing. So there's a three-legged situation here where the first leg is you have to be likable. Second leg is you have to be trustworthy because you can be likable but not trustworthy. A very good
Been there,
example.
done
Yeah.
that. And what's your example?
Very good example. Now there's people like looking in through the door, like
drawing a crowd.
Yeah. So I'll tell you a great if you have time, a Jackie Chan story about that kind of situation. So you have to be likable, but it's not good enough to be likable because you know, you could be a Hollywood celebrity, people like you, but they don't trust you for recommendations. So you need to be trustworthy, and then you need to have this great product or service. If you have all three, I guarantee you'll be enchanting. You could have various levels of the three and probably be enchanting. Apple has a great product. It's enchanting because of its great product. Virgin America, because of the likability of Richard Branson, and Zappos, because of trustworthiness. So three institutions, three primary reasons why they are enchanting. So it's different for everyone.
Oh, that's good. I was listening. Okay, so you're going to have to, because listeners are saying, wait a minute, where's the Jackie Chan story?
Well, this really has nothing to do with anything except it's an enchanting story.
Okay, so we're just going for enchantment now. Okay.
Yeah, forget the content. We're just going for this is like two old friends here. We should have just had served lunch.
Yeah, and brought Jackie Chan. What's the Jackie Chan
okay,
story?
Okay, so Jackie Chan story is... It's about 10 or 15 years ago. At the time, I had a Porsche. In other words, before kids. And so I'm driving this Porsche in Menlo Park. I pull up to a stoplight, and I look over and I see this car full of teenage girls. And these girls are laughing at me, and they're smiling at me, and they're giggling at me. And I look at her and I say, "Oh, God, you've arrived. They know you from Apple. They know you from your venture capital work.
You're driving with your Porsche.
I'm driving my Porsche. Yeah. Even teenage girls know who you are." So one of the girl motions to roll down the window, right? So I roll down the window, and she sticks her head out of her window, and she says to me, "Are you Jackie Chan?" So now my goal in life, on my bucket list, is that one day, Jackie Chan, driving his Rolls Royce or whatever he drives in Hong Kong, pulls up to a stop sign, car full of girls, laughing at him, smiling at him, ask him to roll down his window, and they say to Jackie Chan, "Are you Guy Kawasaki?" It's my goal in life.
You know what's interesting about that story?
Yeah.
Besides the fact that, never mind, whatever is interesting, but that's really fascinating. You know what's interesting about that story is I remember years ago I was to interview Sir Edmund Hillary.
Yeah.
And the only way they could organize it, because the schedule wasn't working, is that could you please go over to what was in the World Trade Center, one of the very top floors above the clouds. I mean, those were big buildings.
Yeah.
And there was a beautiful conference room there. I mean, it was unbelievable. And we were just waiting for Sir Edmund to arrive.
Yeah.
And so Ed had, he was stuck in traffic in New York. But what had happened is there was... The enchantment was already in the room. The energy was in the room before he got there.
Mm-hmm.
That there is, you get to certain people and certain ideas. I mean, you want to get to the point where they're in the room before there. And so he opened the door and said, "Where is Kai Kawasaki?" So you may already have arrived and didn't even know it. And why doesn't my Apple work? Oh, no, that would be too bad.
Yeah.
That would be too bad. Okay, so likability. Give us an example of excuse me. Now, likability. I mean, what do you got to do to be likable?
Well, let's.
I mean,
start.
Working at likable. I used to say some people are, some people
aren't.
Well,
you'd be surprised. I thought it was sort of, should I put this chapter in, right? But I wrote it, and my book is very tactical. You'll notice it's how to. It's not theory. And so I said, one step for likability. Maybe the first step is when you walk into that room, you need to have a good smile. And not a fake smile, not a smile that you're a flight attendant and you're kind of faking, welcome
bye-bye.
Aboard my airline, right. And that you use only your jaw muscles. A great smile is what's called a Duchenne smile, and it uses your eye muscles as well as your jaw muscles. And believe it or not, it creates crow's feet. You want crow's feet. A plastic surgery.
I must be really likable.
You are really likable, yes. I mean that as a compliment. So crow's feet is good. Botox and plastic surgery is out. You want people to see that, that crinkle in your, that twinkle in your eye. The George Clooney. If you ever seen a picture of George Clooney smile, he's got, crow's feet the size of the Yellow River. I mean, that's no problem. So that's one thing. Another is how you dress. There are three sort of patterns of dress. One is you could overdress. So your audience is business casual and you wear something really like, three-piece suit, Brioni, you know, whatever, all the good stuff. And I think the audience gets the impression that you're trying to show that you're richer or you have better taste. If you underdress, so now everybody is in a suit, but you walk in with sandals and jeans that's ripped up and a t-shirt, you're insulting the audience. You're saying, you're not important enough for me to dress up for you. So a component of likability is you dress for a tie. That is, you know, they're business casual, you be business casual. They're in a coat, you're in a coat. So that's the second thing. And the third thing is to develop a perfect handshake. And believe it or not, you love this because you're a scientist. There's a formula for the perfect handshake. Came out of the University of Manchester. All these things seem to come
out
of
before
English.
You tell me, shake my hand. That's it.
See?
Okay.
So it has to be, you know, 1 or 2 seconds long.
Oh, okay. Did
right,
it right there.
Right? And your hand and my hand should be both dry and smooth. They were. Right?
Yeah. Phew.
And we have to have the Duchenne smile with
okay.
crow's feet, right? And you have to be a moderate distance. You don't want to be too close. I don't want to be in your face. I don't want to be too far. And those are the primary components of a perfect handshake. And
we're just in chapter one.
Yeah, I mean, see, already it's worth $14.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So
you
that's
know, we're
likeable.
Not supposed to on air, you know, say the amount.
Oh, really?
The amount. But since this is knowable on the internet, you're on the internet, this
okay.
is findable on the internet, we're going to let this go.
Okay.
This is going to work. We can work with that. We can work
okay.
with that.
You need to tell me these things before I do them.
I'm supposed to tell you everything beforehand? Hey, I noticed that in likability, it didn't say take the host to lunch. I'm pretty sure it's in the book.
Is
I just
that a
didn't
conflict
read
of
it.
Interest?
Nah,
no.
Nah. It goes along with the 14.
Not on
bucks.
Tech Nation.
Not on Tech Nation. Okay, fine. I can only.
We can go Dutch.
Yeah, you can't. Yeah, oh, darn. Okay, that's good. Now. There's no point in telling people about being trustworthy. You're either trustworthy
Why?
Or you're not.
That's
well,
not true.
Really?
No, I think that to some degree, I mean, yeah, if you're an out and right crook, yes. But there are ways.
They have the most appearance of trustworthiness.
Yeah.
Then
yeah.
they really watch them.
So the way to increase your trustworthiness is, first of all, to understand a few basic concepts. Basic concept number one is, if you want people to trust you, you have to trust them first. This is not chicken or egg. There is an order here. If you trust others, they will trust you. Zappos is a great example of that. A second thing is that people are more trustworthy when they embrace a yes attitude. And what I describe as a yes attitude is that when you meet people for the first time, you should always be thinking, how can I help them? Which is very different. Most people think, how can this person help me? Particularly in business functions, everything is like, what can this person do for me? What can I get out of this person? If you had the opposite attitude, you'd be a much better networker, schmoozer, and more trustworthy. And the final thing, using a culinary example, is the world can be divided into two groups of people, people who eat and people who bake. The eaters.
Really?
Yeah. The people who look at pies, who are eaters, say, I want to get as big a slice as possible. I want as much of the zero-sum game pie as possible. The bakers have a different perspective. The bakers say, I can bake more pies. I can bake bigger pies. Everybody can get more pie. Bakers are more trustworthy than eaters. So those three things, you're well on your way to be more trustworthy.
See, I was so wrong.
Yeah, you were.
About,
what can I say?
I was untrustworthy about going down that. No, I wasn't. I was just, you know, ill-prepared.
You're a good foil. That's what makes you a great interviewer.
There you go. Ill-prepared I was. The next one's to prepare. And I mean, there's a long list. We're not going to go over all of them. But, you know, how to prepare. I mean, you just told us what to do, right?
Well, that's the likability and trustworthy part. You know, preparation. Let me say first that it helps to have a great product or service. And so much of preparation is, you know, how do you create a great product or service? For which I've created an acronym because I'm 56 years old. It's getting harder to remember stuff.
Yes.
Seriously.
So it's just a clue for you to remember.
It's early onset Alzheimer's, I'm telling you. So seriously. So I created this acronym called DICEY. Now, hopefully I can remember what DICEY stands for. So DICEY stands for, the D stands for deep, great product, services, ideas. There are lots of features. They do lots of things. The I is, see, like I'm losing my mind.
You can't remember?
No. The I is for intelligence. I can remember. And what intelligence means is when you look at a great product or service, you think to yourself, well, somebody was thinking here. Someone saw my pain. Someone understood my pain. Someone understood what I needed, maybe better than I did. And the example I love to cite is Ford's MyKey. So what Mikey enables you to do is program the top speed of a car. So let's say you have a teenage son who drives and you want to buy a Mustang. In particular, you want to buy a Shelby Mustang GT500, 0 to 60 in 4.4 seconds, you know, 155 miles per hour top speed, just badass Mustang. Can you say badass on it?
I don't think so.
Okay, well, we'll see. I heard Jerry Gross say badass Mustang. No. Anyway, so you want to buy this fast Mustang. Now, at some point, your son's going to want to drive it. So what do? You give him this weapon. So you program the Mikey to not go faster than 55 miles an hour. It's a
so
very
it's
intelligent
his
product.
Key.
Mikey, 155, right?
Yeah.
So that's intelligent. The C stands for complete. Great products are more than just the leather and the steel and the glass and the rubber. It's more than just the software download. It's the documentation, string of enhancements, the OEMs, the VARs, the online groups, the conferences, everything. That's the completeness of a product. The first E stands for empowering. Great products empower you. They make you more creative, more productive. A Macintosh empowers you. An iPhone empowers you. Those kinds of products that generate great enchantment make people feel like they're better. And the final E is for elegance, where great products and services, they have a good human interface. Someone cared about the interface. So the preparation is to create a dicey product, something that's deep, intelligent, complete, empowering, and elegant.
Mm.
See? It's good to have acronyms.
Dicey. All right. Icy dicey.
Yeah.
Okay. That's good. Well, let's skip down a few here to something that I think is important. It's like how to make enchantment endure. I mean, there are a lot of people make that great first impression, or they get the sale, mm-hmm. or they get hired even, and then, you know, within a couple of weeks, it's like, how did we end up with this
yeah.
guy? You know? We've seen that before. How do you make the enchantment endure?
Well, making enchantment endure, the example I like to cite is the Grateful Dead. The Grateful Dead has endured. I mean, you have to hand it to them. Like, you know, they're a third-generation Grateful Dead fans at this point, maybe even fourth-generation Grateful Dead fans. And one of the things that they do that helps them endure is they support what they call tapers. And they allow people to tape their concerts. Well, it's not tape anymore because it's all electronic. But they have special areas at the concert where they enable people to tape the concert and use it for non-commercial purposes. Contrast that to every other music group. You know, have you ever heard
they
of
have
a music
special group? Section with the lawyers.
right. And the jamming signal thing, right? And so that helps them endure because now Grateful Dead fans, multiple generation, they go and they tape the music and they spread it amongst them for their friends and more people hear it and more people buy it and more people listen to it and it helps.
And they really
the
do
Grateful
think
Dead
the one
endure.
In Huntington Beach is different than the one
yes.
in Cedar Rapids.
Yes.
And
yes.
it sounds the same to me, but
and,
not to them.
And it's great. And that's the kind of thing. Another principle of breaking down resistance is the social proof. That you see, you know, we discussed this earlier, you see people, you see lots of people with white earbuds, ergo lots of people have iPods, ergo iPod must be good, ergo I'll buy an iPod, ergo now there's more white earbuds, social proof. Robert Cialdini, who I cite many times in the book, he's an expert in social psychology. His crew ran a study where they were in the petrified wood forest in Arizona. And the forest, this park, had a problem with people stealing souvenirs of petrified wood. So they created this controlled experiment where a part of the forest, they seeded the area with petrified wood, and they kept track of how much was stolen. And there were three conditions. No sign, a sign with one person stealing petrified wood saying not to steal, and another sign showing many people stealing petrified wood saying not to steal. And they found that the sign that was most effective was the one with only one person stealing petrified wood. The thinking there, well, let me tell you the other two. The second most effective was no sign. And the least effective was the sign showing many people doing an
illegal
thing.
Everybody's doing it.
Right. Everybody's doing it. There's social proof. Must be okay, even though the sign says it's not okay. So that's a very important principle that, you know, for better or for worse, if you show other people doing it, they think it's okay.
Now, here's something that's really important. Let's take them together. How to enchant your employees and how to enchant your boss.
Yes. First, let's work on the boss. Because this is the...
Just one second. Are we going to be able to go over 12? just need to back up just a little bit. Okay, just move a little bit. Just looking at me a little closer. He's just checking to make sure. Yeah. Thanks. Thank you. That's good. Keep going.
Okay. So the way to enchant your boss, kind of a painful bromide, is that when your boss asks you to do something, no matter what else you're doing, you should drop everything and do what your boss asks. Now, let's just discuss, you know, the skepticism that's now going through your mind. The fact is that what your boss asks you to do may not be optimal for you, may not even be optimal for the organization. You're a product manager and you're proofreading the documentation. And until you turn in the final documentation, you can't print the manual, you can't ship the product. This is the most important thing you could do. But your boss comes in and she says, I need this PowerPoint presentation and I need it in a week. Drop everything, do this. And you're thinking, but I really should finish the manual. The manual's more important. You know, my recommendation is if you want to enchant your boss, you do drop everything and you work on her PowerPoint presentation. And that is very enchanting.
Really? Because I was always told there were three ways to get ahead on the job.
Okay, what's the three?
Please your boss. So
I think we're in sync here. Yeah, we're in sync.
So what about the, we'll go on the other side, you know, enchanting
enchant
the employee.
Your employee? Well, it's not to come in and ask them to drop everything.
That would be a really good idea.
The way to enchant your employee is another acronym, MAP. And what MAP stands for is mastery, autonomy, and purpose. So what I'm saying is if you want to enchant an employee, you enable that employee to master skills, to become a better social media person, to become a better engineer, salesperson, tester, writer, you know, radio show host, audio engineer, whatever it is. You come work with us, you will learn a new skill. You will also learn that new skill with the A, autonomy. We're not going to micromanage you. We're not going to sit behind you and, you know, watch every time you do something. We're going to master a skill, but you're going to be working on your own. So you're autonomous. And the third thing is P, for purpose. You're going to master a new skill. You're going to be working autonomously. And it's going to be for a higher purpose that serves society. You're going to make the world a better place because this organization makes the world a better place. We're not simply making widgets and exchanging it for money. So the opportunity I offer you and the reason why you should work for us and, you know, the reason why I want you to be an employee is because, you know, you'll be able to master something autonomously at an organization with a higher purpose. And now, you notice I did not mention money. Within reason that you can make an adequate living, I don't think money is that great an enchanter. It introduces a whole new level of complexity.
But you can be real disenchanted if you're not paid the right amount of money.
Yes, but you can also be disenchanted and you're paid the right amount and you're working on stuff. If you're micromanaged, working for a jerk at a company that has no real high purpose, and you're not learning anything new. It can suck the life. I mean, easy for us to say because, you know, we have jobs, but yes, it can suck the life out of you. And so, that's the way to enchant up, and that's the way to enchant down.
Now, how do you resist enchantment?
I added a whole chapter about resisting enchantment, and the reason, there's two reasons. First reason is, there are people,
believe it or not. Did your wife write this?
Believe it or not, there are people in the world who don't have your best interests at heart. So God forbid they read this book, they learn how to enchant people, and they're convincing you to do stuff that's not good for you. So I wrote a chapter about how to resist people's enchantment. It would be things like creating a checklist to make sure that everything you need to do or that needs to be fulfilled by a product or service is fulfilled. To imagine yourself 6 months after the purchase, you know, will you really be happy? Is this total whim, stupid purchase? 6 months, will you say that was a great purchase? Or are you going to say that was stupid? I should have never done it. Another thing for people like me who don't have a lot of self-control is if you know you're going to be enchanted when you go to a shopping center, or if you know you're going to be enchanted when you go to an all-you-can-eat buffet, don't go to the shopping center. Don't go to the buffet. Remove the possibility of being enchanted. So those are ways. Now, the second reason why I included that chapter is because I'm still trying to make people enchanting. And so if you understand the techniques that are used to resist enchantment, you will be a better enchanter.
Aha.
So there's two purposes for that
You
chapter.
get them coming and going.
That's right.
You really overcome their resistance. I see.
That's right.
Now, in the end, you have great Guy's Realistic Enchantment Aptitude Test.
Is that not a great acronym?
20 questions. You know, you said
yeah.
how many muscles to make an enchanting
right.
tree. You already went over that. How should you dress compared to other people? What are you looking for that? Are you trying to say, gee, you're natural, or you really got to work on it, or what are you doing?
Well, it's more just a fun thing that, you know, I think that it reinforces the lessons you've learned if you've taken a test. I mean, I hope that's true. Every day there's millions of people taking tests, right? So I wanted to reinforce this. I wanted it to be a fun thing. And, you know, one of the great benefits of writing a book, particularly your 10th book, so your editors leave you alone at this point, is you can put little funny things in there. You know, it's like Easter eggs all over that
they
book.
They don't read it too closely anymore.
Yeah, they just want it out. And so there's this test that's amusing, and I also provide the test online. That has a different purpose. So I tell people there's a Facebook version and a website version where you can take this test before you read the book. And guess what? Everybody who takes it gets about a 12 or 13. So they figure out, oh, I'm not enchanting. I got to read the book. Hallelujah.
That'll be $14.
Yeah.
How did I know?
Right.
Well, Guy, always a pleasure.
Thank you.
You come back and see us anytime. See how good enchantment
That's
works?
That's right. And, you know, can I give you one more tip? Do we have time?
Sure.
Okay, this is a power tip so you can leave. So my buddy Robert Cialdini, I asked him, you know, when you do something for someone, which is a way to enchant people, and they thank you, what should you say? Most people say, you're welcome. He says, the best thing you can say is, you're welcome, and I know you would do the same for me. The reason why you say that is because you're saying to the other person, I think you're an honorable person. I know, Moira, you would do the same for me. You're a good person. The second thing you're accomplishing is, you're basically saying, I know I did something for you. I'm putting you on record that you now know you did something for me. Someday, there's going to be some reciprocation. That is a beautiful answer.
I see. I'll have to think about that one.
All right.
I can hardly wait to see what you're going to do for me, Guy.
Yeah, right.
This is really, we had a discussion earlier. Never mind. My guest today is Guy Kawasaki. The book is Enchantment, The Art of Changing Hearts, Minds, and Actions. It's published by Portfolio Penguin. I'm Moira Gunn. You're listening to Tech Nation.